Hey, yeah, so I'm Kokomo Joe. I'm just a goofy dude who loves Jesus. God is good all the time. And I see a lot of hope and faith in this room tonight. And it really warms my heart because, man, this Christian walk ain't easy. But I know it's worth it. And I'm going to start off. I'm a little nervous. It's my first testimony ever. But I'm going to open up with a little scripture once I put my eyes on. You know, when you're tired, he says to go to him and he will give you strength. Isaiah 40:29-31 says, he gives power to the weak and strength to the powerless. Even youths will become weak and tired, and young men will fall in exhaustion. But those who trust in the Lord will find new strength. They will soar high on wings like eagles. They will run, not grow weary. They will walk, not faint. I don't know how many times I go to this, and it gives me so much hope. I don't know where to start. So, I was born in Kokomo, obviously, and my dad was a Marine, alcoholic. My mom, she was addicted to pretty much anything she can get her hands on. I don't remember what I did yesterday, but I do remember when I was about 4 years old, waking up, and they were crying, and I didn't know why, and they said, your sister's dead. Like, I had a five-month-old sister, a little baby, you know. While they were out at the bar drinking, I guess my cousin had a seizure when he was watching her, and he suffocated her. So I remember that like it was yesterday, you know. So growing up in that kind of environment, I watched my dad beat my mom all the time, and I didn't know why, you know. And so I got a little older, and I found out why. It was because she was beating me. He would come home off of work from the Marines, and I would have bruises, black eyes, belt lashes across, you know, wherever. So he would, you know, he would do her in, and which I don't think that justified it at all, but that kind of made more sense why he was beating her all the time. So growing up, I had a lot of hatred towards my cousin. Like, and he was just a downright ugly dude, just mean. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, man, you killed my sister. Like, so many times I wanted to hit him with my car. I almost did once. Like, I put it in drive and nailed the gas, and I just, I went around him. That was God. That wasn't me. Because I had every intention. I was going to run him over. But now I see that was Jesus. That was him guiding me back. Because if I'd have hit him, I'd have went to prison, and I probably would have ended up, ain't none of us made for prison, but I probably would have done myself in or something stupid. But so growing up, you know, I was picked on in school. I was kind of like the class nerd, you know. I had bifocals on. Grandma cut my hair, put a bowl around my head, you know. She dressed me funny, and so I got picked on by the jocks and by the people that were cool, and I always got bullied, always. So I carried that for a while till about eighth, ninth grade. And one day I just had enough. You know, I went around the corner and these bullies standing there, and I knew what they were going to do. And when they dumped my books out of my hand, this time I had enough. And when I came up with that social study book, hit dude in the chin, it's like it created a monster in me. Nobody picked on me no more after that. You know, then I started picking on the people that were picking on people like me. So growing up, it was just a way of life. You know, I grew up in a government-based apartment complex. The white kids didn't want nothing to do with me because I didn't have money. So, you know, I hung out with the blacks and Mexicans, and that's all we did. We just smoked weed and drank 40s, and I seen a bunch of gangbanging around me all the time. And I was still kind of a nerd. I really hadn't sprouted yet. But then when I was about 17, one day I just continued that wrath, that beating people up, and just started selling drugs and started feeling all this pain that I had in me from getting high and drinking. And so I did this for a while, and I lived like that until I was about 24. And my son, I didn't think I could have babies. I just didn't. I thought I was sterile or just wasn't meant to have kids. And then I got married. I was young, and Chance, my son here, was born. And the first time I went to jail, I had been in and out of jail a few times, you know, no big deal. so about 10 or 11 times. But when he was born, I had just bought him a big wheel for his first birthday, and it wasn't there yet. And I looked out that little window, and I visualized him riding that big wheel across the yard. I just started crying. I didn't care what people thought. I just started crying. And that changed my ways, man. I had to get away from the gangbang, and I had to get away. I had to do something different because I was going down a bad path where he wouldn't have had a father. So I ended up getting away from that. And then about a year later, I had another baby. And sorry, this is hard for me a little bit. But he was colicky. He cried a lot. Chance, man, that kid was, man, he's always smiling, laughing. He hardly ever cried, like, easy. But my other kid, he didn't. We named him Brayden. And me and Chance's mom, we ended up splitting up, and we just fought all the time. So she called me one day and said, "Joe, what do you think about adoption?" And I said, "I don't." I was like, "Give me my son, you know what I mean? And I'll raise him. You know, I'll get government help. I'll do whatever I got to do to take care of my boys." And it was dropped, you know. A couple months goes by, I'm getting him, but not the other one. And she kept using the excuse, "Oh, he's sick, he's crying," which I believed it. But then after a couple months went by, I'm like, man, crying or not, I want to see Brayden, man. Where's my kid? Well, I get a call one day. I was working at Golden Corral, and it was from these people's attorney. They said, "Yeah, we, I'm with so-and-so, and they have Brayden, da-da-da-da. The mom signed her rights over. We want you to sign your rights over, or we're going to hit you with all these medical bills because he was in such poor shape." So I went, and I mean, I cussed him out up and down. I hung up on him, and, "No, you ain't getting my sign." You know, "No," you know, and I went to go get legal aid, couldn't get it. I was just partying all the time. I didn't have a job. None of my family would help me. So I ended up signing my rights over, and because of my lifestyle. So for years, I drank that away and cried every night. Like, I mean, for years, like, why did I give my son up? Why did I give my son up? And I always had this vision that if I ever do see him again, he's probably going to be so mad at me that he's probably going to punch me in my mouth, you know? Well, I gave up on the fact that ever seeing him again. So I lived that life for a while. Then I got into meth. That didn't take long. 6 months. My son seen me, man. I wasn't Kokomo Joe. I was Pawn Shop Joe. Man, I took his BB gun and sold and pawned it for $10. Who does that? I did. Because I also found out I wasn't just addicted to drugs. I was addicted to money. I also gave him his first Loratab when he was 11 years old, just so I could get my pills to sell him, sell 100 of them for $500. And yeah, I did that. And I didn't really realize that until he gave his testimony. And that was the first thing out of his mouth. And I had to go to God on that. So this went on for a little while. One day I was always a believer. My grandma, she was, you know, a Southern woman. So I knew of Jesus. I didn't know what he did. I didn't know the miracles he performed or nothing. But if you ever think you can't go to God just because you relapse or you're under the influence, that's a lie, man, because he's always listening. He's there. He don't leave. Because when I called out to him, he answered me. I said, "Lord, this cannot be the path you have for me." Because when I looked around, I was becoming what I was around. I gave up. I shot up a couple times, caught Hep C from it. You know, I just didn't have no hope. And God was showing me. So then I took off, went to Fort Wayne. And I met Toby, CJ. Actually came here because I went to the Salvation Army. 4 months, you know, I got this. Me and God's good. You know, I got this. I, you know. I didn't have nothing. You know, I get high. We stay sober. So I bounced around. I went to the 13-step house, and things didn't work out there. And I did this for about 3 years. I relapsed like 6 different times. Every time I got complacent. You know, I got this. That didn't prepare me. I didn't have nothing, you know what I'm saying? No, I didn't have no hope. When I knew Toby, you know, I thought I was doing good, but when I came here, actually, just to get out of the 13 step house, Donnie Foster was coming up here, and I said, "Man, I'll go." And I didn't know what this faith based mentoring was. I met Marvin, and I started coming back. And the more I came back, the more I started hearing stories like what we all shared a little bit ago. And that was before I relapsed. After that, I relapsed for about 6 times for 3 years, right? I already said that, didn't I? Come on, laugh, y'all. I'm getting nervous. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, I was in and out of the 13 Step House a couple times, Salvation Army a couple times. And that last time I went to the Salvation Army, before that, I was at the Road to Recovery, and I relapsed, met a girl online. You know, I spent a lot of my time into wanting to be desired by the opposite sex. I didn't care what they looked like. As long as they were nice to me, it's whatever. I met a girl online, ended up being in Garrett, Indiana, when I relapsed. And she brought me to Inspiration Ministries in Auburn. Well, I couldn't pass a drug test, so James wouldn't accept me. So he was going to give me a ride to the Salvation Army one more time to get right. And while I was waiting on him, I thought he was the police because I was coming down and I was paranoid. And I ended up calling somebody who probably was the police. This dude freaked me out the whole way there. Kept looking at the cops behind us, man. Talking like that. I'm like, dude, man, get me out of this car. But so I went and got right. I got good with God again. And when he really saved me, they had a cross that was probably, I don't know, 8 feet tall or whatever, with a crown on it. And I remember walking by it, picturing Jesus on that cross and what he did for me. And I started crying like a baby. I fell to my knees. And it wasn't about me this time. It was about what he went through. Here I think, oh, poor me. I've been through this. I've been through that. I saw this. I seen that. Ain't nothing compared to what that dude went through for us, for me. And so 2 weeks went by. I got right. And I had went to the hospital because I got a bad back, and they gave me a shot of morphine, right? And I called James, and I said, "Hey, man, I'm clean off of meth. I can probably pass a drug test. Will you come get me?" And he came to get me, but then I had told him that they just gave me a shot of morphine. So James turned right around and said, "Man, holler at me when you're clean." And I'm like, all right. So a couple of days went by, and I was thinking in my head, I'm like, man, this program just ain't for me. I want to give this other one a shot, that one in Auburn. I'm like, but how can I give them to give me a drug test? Like, if I go ask them, they're going to tell me no. And I was back to my normal goofy self, man. I was walking and singing and dancing. And dude called me down. He said, "Hey, man, Joe, Evan wants to see you in his office." I went in there, and Evan's like, "Joe, you still clean?" I'm like, "Yeah, man, what's up, bro?" And he's like, "Pee in this cup for me." And look, right then, I'm like, all right, so I did, and I passed. Well, I had somebody sneak a call to James. James came, got me, and I ain't looked back since. And that was March 5th when I went in, and it was March 19th when he came and got me. And so March 5th, here, I got 3 years coming up sober off everything because, yeah, it's not me. I mean, this is my testimony, but this is really God's testimony through me. Because, man, God has showed me so much, y'all. Like, from where I was to where I'm at now is just, it's only Jesus. Like, that drug test was just a small thing that God, because God knew, He knew that I would need Inspiration Ministries to get right with Him enough to get right with myself, to get right for, to be a good father, to be a good husband, to be a good brother. Where was I at?
Clean from everything, 3 years.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I remember sitting in the program one time. You know, I was about 6 months clean this last time around, you know. And my son was back home going through addiction. And he didn't want to hear. I was trying to turn him on to Christian rap. Brian Trail, hey, check this out. And he was like, "Yeah, Jesus, you know, whatever. Dad, you keep relapsing. You got this trend, month and a half, 3 months, relapse, month and a half, 3 months, relapse." So he just kept rolling his eyes at me. And I remember one night he was going through his addiction, and some of my family members had set him up and pistol whipped him. And all kinds of crazy stuff. And that was a Satan in my head. He wanted me to go home and retaliate. I was in my car, bags packed, going home to beat the crap out of some people, and only the Lord above knows where I'd have been if I'd done that. I'm driving out the driveway, and I just get this still voice in my head. You know, people say, oh, I heard God's voice, I hear this. I really don't. He uses other people's music for me. But that day, with the thought of retaliation, I all of a sudden had this voice say, not yet. Not yet. Like, don't leave, not yet. So I went back, and I'm sitting outside, and I didn't know the significance of this, but I'm crying to the Lord, and I'm about ready to go to Bible school and go back home. I didn't know what to do. Do I go? Do I stay? I'm like, Lord, please talk to me. Show me something. And I didn't hear nothing, and I'm crying, and I lit up a cigarette, and I'm just sitting there. And I remember looking up, and I looked back down. I had noticed that there was a cloud above the farmhouse, and the thing about this cloud was it wasn't moving. And it was the only cloud in the sky, and I don't know if it was supernatural. I don't know what it was, but I know what I saw. I look up again, and I'm like, Lord, just show me that you're listening to me, that you hear me. And this time, and it might have been my imagination, but I see my name in this cloud that's in capital letters that said Joe. So I'm thinking, man, I'm tripping. I'm like, no, I'm not seeing this. So I look back up, and it was there. And I went to go, hey, y'all, come here. Am I tripping? But guess what? But nobody around. I'm like, well, I'm going to take a picture of it. I forgot my phone was in the bedroom charging. And I knew right then, and once I walked away, that was for me and me only. And I can sit here today and I can question it. Okay, did I see my name? I can chalk that up to imagination. But what I do know that I saw is that cloud that didn't move for about 7 to 8 minutes. And just like it appeared, the name dissipated and the cloud starts moving. So for the last couple of years, I didn't know the significance of that. I just know what I saw, right? Well, I'm telling one of the guys, Damon, in the program, and he's real knowledgeable of the word. And I said, dude, you probably ain't gonna believe me, but I'm telling you, man, like, if I had left that night, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. And something just told me to stay. And he said, Joe, you know, in the book of Exodus, he appeared as fire and clouds. And when the Israelites wanted to flee, he appeared as, am I right, Robert? He appeared as a cloud to show him to stay. It was a sign to stay. So right then, God was answering me. He was saying stay. But I just didn't know it because of my lack of the knowledge of the word. So today, when I want to give up, right, I start questioning, is God real? Like, man, am I just, you know how Satan does. He'll use anything to get in your head. I remember what he's shown me, the one of many things he's shown me, and that gives me the strength to stay. And now today, you know, I went from not having no hope, no confidence. I thought I had inner peace. But then one day a pastor asked me, he's like, Joe, if God's love was all the love you had, period, would that be sufficient for you? And I said, oh, yeah, man. Yeah, dude. I mean, God loves me and I love him right back. You know, and why when I woke up the next morning, that was the first question that was on my head. I was so worried about being with a woman. Was God's love sufficient? Am I manipulating God's love? Am I using him? So I started crying and I said, Lord, show me, like, search my heart and show me how to make your love sufficient. Because I don't even know what that means. I don't even know what that looks like. And I spent about an hour and a half to 2 hours in my car that night. In the parking lot, you know, Don Bertram, he was the house manager. This dude's, like, all in my window, like, but he seen I was crying and I was praying. He left me alone. What I noticed a week later is all my insecurities started going out the window. Because I used to look in the mirror because I don't look like I used to. You know, I know I'm still a handsome devil and all, but, you know. I used to think I was ugly, like no women wanted me. I just thought I wasn't worthy. All these feelings I had, a week went by, man, and I didn't have these thoughts anymore. Like, when I looked in the mirror, I seen what's on the inside. And I started loving myself. And here I've been at this for a year. I had done graduated the program, stuck around. You know, I'm at this for a year, right? So I'm like, this is what it feels like to love myself. this is what true inner peace feels like. Because then I didn't even care what I looked like anymore. I was just doing this for Jesus, for what he did for me. And then the next thing you know, my son calls me up, who was once rolling his eyes at me, and says, Dad, I got something to say. Because he'd been going through his stuff, right? And so me and all my buddies have been praying one simple prayer. Lord, show him your light like you've shown me and so many others. He says, Dad, I got something to tell you. I'm in a loony bin. Well, it wasn't a loony bin, but he said, they think I'm crazy, but you'll believe me. And I said, what, son? He goes, his exact words was, Dad, I think God's trying to show me something. And he didn't believe it. Look, I got chills, man. He didn't even believe in Jesus. At this point, it's just a name to him. And when he told me that, I started crying. And he said, can I come see you for a week? And I was like, yeah. And because I gave Jesus a chance and I was faithful to him, he was faithful to me because he brought my son to the program. He's got, what, a year and a half off of meth? Is that 2 years? 2 years? Amen. All right. And it's all because Psalms 46:10, be still and know that I'm God. I was still. And I persevered through all the hardships and the gunk and the whatever, because I know it's worth it in the end. And when I look at him, I just can't believe it. And today, what I didn't get to is, God also has brought me, if I said this already, my bad, but he has brought me my adopted son I gave up for adoption. He is now back in my life. And this happened, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. I called Chance up and he's like, hey, I just got off the phone with Ricky. See, they changed his name on me, and that's another thing I had to deal with. You know, you change a dog's name, you don't change a human being's name, is the way I thought. He's like, I just got off the phone with Ricky and he's going to stay with mom. So I'm thinking, cool, so maybe I can create a relationship with him. Because like 4 years ago, I started to, but his adopted mom found out and then fed him a bunch of lies and told him I didn't care about him and I was a piece of crap and just all this stuff. So now I'm thinking, all right, so I'm gonna call his mom. Like, I'm gonna get her on the phone and see if she cares. And she's like, no, Joe, absolutely. She's like, you wanna create a relationship with him? Go for it. And now, like, he just video chatted me today and he actually said, I love you to me, which I about cried. I'm like, man, and just thinking where I've been to where I'm at now, like, boom, son number one, son number two. Then brought me, you know, this beautiful woman who, you know, they tell you, give yourself a year, work on yourself, right? Don't worry about no women, don't worry about no men. I used to think, whatever. Like, yeah, whatever. It's so the truth. I went 3 years not being with nobody, and God was preparing me this whole time to be the man who she was praying for. And I never thought in a million years that I'd be standing up here 5 years later, after the last time I was here, with no hope, before I relapsed, and now I'm giving y'all like my first testimony. I'm a case manager for Inspiration Ministries. I've been doing that for a little over a year now, and it's not a job, man. When God calls you to do something, you just know it. And every time I have these doubts in my mind, like, man, I'm not good enough. Like, I'm not doing a good enough job for these men. I slip, I cuss, like, I sin, I fall short, I do this, I do that. But then every time I think that in my mind, without telling nobody, God answers me loud and clear. I walk in this morning, dude comes over. I was like, what's up, bro? And I was like, hey, you all right? And he goes, yeah, I'm good. And I was like, nah. And we ended up talking for like 35 minutes. When we got done, he said, Joe, he said, thank you so much. That right then again, that was God saying, son, you're where I want you to be. So don't ever let Satan tell any of y'all that y'all ain't good enough. You ain't worthy. You ain't this. You ain't that. Oh, well, I fall short. I did this, man. I ain't good enough. That's a lie from the enemy. And he's going to do anything he can to steal your joy from you. Right now, I think that's all I can think of. I'm going to end it at that. But just don't. No, I'm lying. I got something else. So when you feel like you're stuck, don't give up. You go to this word, or you go to prayer first, always, right? Or go to your people around you. If I can get this here, there it is. So this is out of the book of James, and when I'm going, It's one thing to sit here and tell you, oh yeah, when you go through the test or when you go through it, da 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 da. Now when you're going through it, you're going through it. Like, man, you F the world, F this, blah, 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 I got the case of it. This word right here says, dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow. For when your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect and complete, needing nothing. And then now, I'm going to skip down to 12. God blesses those who patiently endure testing and temptation. Afterward, they will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love Him. And remember, when you are being tempted, do not say, God is tempting me. God is never tempted to do wrong, and He never tempts anyone else. Temptation comes from our own desires, which entice us and drag us away. Thank you.